In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Friday, May 24th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And it is, of course, today...
Furlough Friday.
Friday long we'll be celebrating Furlough Friday, and my colleague Jason Miller here for a special edition of the Federal News Countdown on Furlough Friday. We are counting down today the three most important federal news stories that you should pay attention to all summer long. Now, of course, you know, Jason, Memorial Day is the traditional beginning of the summer season, although when we look outside here in the D.C. area today, you wouldn't guess it. I mean, unless you were thinking about maybe summer in, like, Alaska or something.
This is perfect weather. I will not complain one least bit.
I think it's, what, around 60 degrees right now.
And windy.
And windy today. And so we nonetheless are going to...
But you know why it's like the weather is like this outside.
I think it's because...
only one reason.
Because today is...
Furlough Friday.
115,000 federal workers are not at work today.
That's right. And that'll be one of the things that we talk about as we go through the Federal News Countdown. The three most important federal news stories you should pay attention to all summer long between Monday, Tuesday, I guess, when you get back to work, and Labor Day. And we start where we always do with...
Number three!
And my choice for the third most important federal news story that you should pay attention to all summer long is actually about...
Furlough Friday.
And I noticed as I put these together, and I just want to point out to folks, I'm not kissing up to you because everybody that works around here knows that I don't do that. But a couple of these stories are yours, and this one is that. It is from federalnewsradio.com, 5% of federal workforce to be furloughed Friday. And that's a big deal. I mean, that's a lot of people to be out today, and including you talk about some of the agencies here, they're pretty much just closed for business today.
Right, and I think that it just shows the impact of sequestration. There's been a lot of discussion about, well, what's really sequestration really doing? Was it a lot of the sky is falling from the White House? Well, today's a pretty good example. The sky fell. I mean, HUD, EPA, OMB, and IRS have all closed. And let's be honest. I mean, that's a lot of people who aren't being served today because there's no money for these workers to be there. And it's a huge hit on these workers' pocketbooks, and they're not going to be spending. There's no trickle-down effect into the broader community, the broader economy. So these people may not be going out to lunch today. They may not be spending money on dry cleaning. They may not be going shopping for the weekend because they're taking this hit in their paycheck.
It's a bigger – yeah, I think it's a bigger damper than that. I have a hard time believing, no matter how you've planned for this – that if you're sitting at home today, not working, and you're watching the Memorial Day sale ads on TV or hearing them on the radio or whatever, I have a hard time believing that you're going to go, yeah, even though I'm off work and I'm not getting paid at all today, I'm going to go out and buy whatever the big item is. I don't see that.
I've talked to a few people who have been furloughed already, and one person said, listen, on one hand, it was a great day. I got gardening done. I made dinner. I did laundry. I did stuff that I normally don't have that much time to do. But on the other hand, it was awful. You know, I was trying, my work never stops. I'm always have emails and things to do. So it just puts me even further behind. And it's, on one hand, yeah, they can rationalize, maybe the people at the GS-15 SES level can say, yeah, the money is not that big of a deal. But for many people, you know, anyone who's living, paycheck to paycheck or just, has a family of four, no one makes that much money that they can just, not worry about one day worth of work missing out on.
The reason that I selected this story, and we'll talk about this story later on in the hour, but the reason I chose it is because your story came out this morning, late in the day yesterday, and then you added to it again this morning. We're learning this afternoon that park police will not be furloughed at all after June 1st. So just a couple more days that they're eligible for furloughs, and then they're on duty for the rest of the fiscal year. The reason I think we should be paying attention to this all summer long is because I think we're going to see a lot more of this back and forth. We've already seen carve-outs for food inspectors. We've already seen carve-outs for FAA air traffic controllers and some others. And it wouldn't surprise me one bit if we see a few more carve-outs throughout the summer.
And even reprogramming at DOD is happening. So they're able to cut their furloughs from 20 days to 11 days. And I think Secretary Hagel said maybe even a deeper cut, you know, meaning in terms of fewer days yeah. come down the path.
My third most important story you should be following all summer long is from my colleague Jason Miller. 5% of federal workforce to be furloughed Friday, and that is today. And, of course, that means today is
Furlough Friday.
I love the symbol at the end. Your third most important federal news story of the week, Jason, is Jared Serbu's story headlined VA chipping away at oldest disability claims in backlog. And this is a similar strategy to what OPM is doing with their retirement claims backlog, is they're essentially going to the bottom of the stack and saying, we really need to get rid of these as quickly as possible to make our overall timeline look better. Yes, but I don't mean that to be unfair. They want to take care of these people who have been in the line the longest.
Right. I picked this story, I guess, for two main reasons. Number one, this week was just incredibly busy with the amount of attention getting put on this VA backlog. There was hearings, there was introduction of legislation, there was press conferences, and I think this is just the beginning of the attention that's going to happen over the next 3, 4, 5 months. And the second reason I put this out there is VA has made a commitment, made really three commitments. They said by the end of June, I'm sorry, they're going to get done the oldest backlogs, claims that have more than 2 years in. So they have a deadline that's coming in about 30 days, roughly. They also made a commitment that said, you know, for the next ones that have been, you know, waiting for at least a year, we're going to get those done by a certain date. And then we're going to get everything done by 2015. So this is going to be an ongoing story. This is going to be an ongoing focus both from VA and from the Hill. And let's be honest, I mean, there's certain stories that are going to get that capture the attention of what the federal government does, how the federal government works. And it matters to the outside viewpoint of how they view the government. If they can process these claims, I mean, I watch, you know, the news, you know, I watch Jon Stewart, which is not necessarily the news, but Rachel Maddow addressed it, Jon Stewart's addressed it. So you're getting a lot of play across all these different entities about what's going on with VA. So I think this matters in many, many ways.
People are talking about this issue who don't normally talk about federal government operational issues. You're exactly right. The nut in Jared's story, I think, is the quote from the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, Congressman Jeff Miller. He said at this hearing about this issue, what do you tell a veteran who's been waiting for 2 or 3 years, all of a sudden within 30 days you've been able to give a permanent decision? How does it happen a file can sit for that long without a permanent decision being made? I think there are two separate issues there. But the first part of that, how is it that this has been going on for 2 years and nobody's done anything about it, and then within 30 days you can make a decision? That's the one that if VA can give a convincing argument for that, listen, here are the conditions under which this happened, that I think they could go a long way toward helping their case on Capitol Hill.
I think there's two things that people seem to forget around this VA issue. The first thing is this backlog is not new. This backlog is 20 years old. And yeah, the VA could have fixed it before, but I was just speaking with Roger Baker, the former VA CIO at the Management of Change Conference earlier this week. You know, he left government about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. He's now at Agilex. And one of the things he said was the VA has known for decades that this is a problem. The VA knew that when they were sending, when the DOD and the president decided to send troops into Iraq and Afghanistan, there was going to come back with people who were going to be hurt, who were going to be injured, who's going to need help for the rest of their lives. So they could have fixed the system could have been fixed years ago, but nobody had the guts is not the right word, but the
it just didn't happen.
It didn't happen. And now they're trying to, General Shinseki, Secretary of VA, is trying to fix it. And he's getting maybe unfairly blamed for this backlog when this backlog has been around for a long time. Secondly, people, and Allison Hickey, who testified at this hearing, brought up the fact several times that the reason why the backlog is so bad is because they opened up the aperture to say, we're going to let more people in and look at their backlog, including Vietnam veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange, and that opened up something like 240,000 more potential disability claims. So there's got to be some perspective here, and I think that's what's missed many times in both the Congress, which I guess isn't so surprising when it comes to perspective, but also in the major media. And I think Jared did a nice job of presenting the discussion, the story, in a way that captured both sentiments.
Jared, we'll have more on the story this afternoon on In Depth with Francis Rose. Jason's third most important federal news story you should pay attention to all summer long is headlined VA Chipping Away at Oldest Disability Claims and Backlog. And you can read it later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. This week's Federal News Countdown continues in a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose. This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with my colleague Jason Miller and I, and we are counting down the three most important federal news stories that you should pay attention to all summer long, and we are up to the second most important federal news story that you selected this week, Jason, is our colleague Mike O'Connell's story headlined Obama to nominate Tangerlini as GSA administrator. I can't say anybody was really shocked by this because all the signs that we saw, and Mike writes about some of the things that you've covered throughout the course of the spring, all the signs that we saw indicated that Dan Tangerlini was kind of laying the groundwork for eventually being nominated to take over at GSA.
And this story is really just emblematic of the bigger issues. I think Tangerlini, you have him at GSA, you have now Catherine Archuleta at OPM, you have Penny Pritzker at Commerce, you have a new census director that just got nominated yesterday. You have, I'm still thinking of all the other people that are out there.
The transportation
secretary. Still coming through, right? So the story is list. This is just an example of the bigger issues of all these changes. Oh, there's a new Office of Management and Budget Deputy Director for Management that still needs to be nominated. Mm-hmm. So you have all these changes that are coming. And my thought is that's something that's going to have an impact on how the government operates. These new leaders, this new, you know, whether they come in and they have new ideas or they take the administration's current set of priorities and kind of act out them in a different way or take them in a left or right direction. And I think that's really what this impact is going to be. I think with Dan Tangerlini, you kind of have a known commodity. He's been there 14 months or so. You know where he's going. Hmm. But, you know, with OPM, a new OPM director, she could take it and she could look at the GS system and say, my goal, my legacy is going to be the redoing of the GS system as an example.
Right.
New transportation person could come and say, fuel efficiency or safe driving or whatever it is that's going to change the way the agency works. So I think people need to watch just how these people, how quickly they get confirmed. And then once they do get confirmed, what do they do in their first, I hate the 100-day mark, but in their first few months, I'll say.
The only common thread that I see in all of these nominations, because some of them have government experience, some of them don't, and there are a variety of other markers on all these folks, but one thing that I see in common among all of them is none of them will require the White House to spend any political capital, it appears. They all seem to be people who are at least shouldn't find any resistance on the Republican side in the Senate.
You hope so. The OPM director nominee, Catherine Archuleta, is an interesting person. She was both chief of staff at transportation and chief of staff at
Labor.
Oh, labor. Thank you. So she never had to go through the confirmation process before, but she was also the campaign director. She was also the national campaign director for the Obama reelection. So that right there leaves people, could put some Republicans an uneasiness, especially with what's happening maybe at the IRS issues.
Maybe so, but that doesn't strike me as something that should automatically cause somebody to say she's not qualified to do the job, especially given experience at two cabinet-level federal agencies.
Right.
At the very highest level.
But sometimes experience doesn't play into it.
That's true.
It's the optics, if you will.
It's the whole Washington. By the way, where did optics come from? That's a word. I mean, I've been in this town for a long time now, and that's a word that I'm just now hearing a lot within the past couple of months.
I don't know where it came from, but I just think you're starting to see that how does it, what's the perception? What's the optics of it all? I think it's a kind of a funny term.
The thing that I think tipped everybody off to the fact that Dan Tangerlini at least wanted the job is something that Mike O'Connell writes about in this column and has to do with you. He writes, Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller interviewed Tangerlini in January about six priorities he had set to help the agency move forward in the aftermath of the conference scandal. And I remember a conversation you and I had when you reported that story. where I said to you, this doesn't look like somebody who's just enacting who's going to just keep the trains running on time. This looks like somebody who's being very deliberate about laying out a vision for how he or she would want to lead an organization.
And that's why a lot of people in the community were confused what was taking so long for his nomination to go through. You know, I know a lot of people said, well, the White House had other kind of bigger fish to fry. They had, you know, CIA director, they had defense. But if you have someone who's qualified, who seemingly wants to stay, who has a long-term plan, just get them nominated and let's push it through the process. Let's get out of the way. So in fact, earlier in the week, I had a friend who emailed me and said, you should look into this. Why has Tangerlini not been nominated yet? And I said, that's a great question. I've asked it before myself, but the White House doesn't seem to offer too much insight. And then literally 24 hours later, boom, he was nominated.
It's like the old line about, you know, what the most important thing about comedy is, right? Timing.
Timing.
Yeah. The reason that I thought that was particularly interesting, though, is because I've heard from several high-level former GSA officials within the last 6 months or so that they're disappointed that this administration, like other administrations, I mean, you can go back, has kind of treated GSA as a very low priority. Like, it doesn't really matter that much to the political operation. Yep. at the White House. And as I say, it's not just this administration. It's the Bush administration too, and the Clinton administration mm-hmm. before that, and all the way, but you can just keep going back.
I think that's a challenge that unfortunately GSA has, and people underestimate the value it brings. One of the interesting things that came out at the Management of Change conference is how much GSA is responsible for the federal budget. And it was something effective like 25% of the federal budget in terms of procurement, not the entire federal budget, but the procurement budget goes through GSA. Well, that's a huge amount. No other place probably gets 25% of the procurement budget. I mean, yes, DOD is 50%, but no one piece of DOD gets a big chunk. So if that's the case, then why isn't the White House or any White House pay more attention? And, you know, that was a story, you know, when Martha Johnson, the first GSA administrator during the Obama administration, was hung up in Congress to get approved. That's one of the stories we did and asked that question is basically, you know, why doesn't the White House, why doesn't Congress get GSA? And, you know, I think Dan Tangerlini is trying to, part of his role over the last year is to restore confidence, but also to highlight the importance of GSA, and I think he's done an admirable job. He's had a lot of challenges, without a doubt.
Jason Miller's second most important federal news story you should pay attention to all summer long is headlined Obama to nominate Tangerlini as GSA administrator. It's Mike O'Connell's story on federalnewsradio.com. All the stories that you should be counting down on, or that you are counting down on, this federal news countdown today on Furlough Friday.
Furlough Friday.
Are on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later today. And my choice for the second most important federal news story you should pay attention to all summer long is coming next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's this week's Federal News Countdown as we observe
Furlough Friday.
115,000 to 117,000 federal employees off work today, and my colleague Jason Miller and I, on a special edition of this week's Federal News Countdown, counting down the three most important federal news stories that you should follow all summer long, and my choice for the second most important story of that nature kind of ties in, Jason, to your story. I chose your story headlined OMB Director Taps Van Roekel to Lead Management Team. And the reason that I chose this, as I mentioned, it kind of fits with what you were talking about before, is I thought that it was interesting that the selections for the person who will occupy the office and duties of the deputy director for management at OMB and the controller at OMB were not actually given the jobs of acting DDM and acting controller.
Yes, and that's funny because I went back and forth with OMB about that on the story, and basically what it comes down to is my impression is, I should say, is as soon as they give those people the acting titles, that starts some kind of clock.
Mm-hmm.
And they can only be acting for so long. So I think what the White House is doing is not starting the clock on these people, because I guess the hope is that, number one, that they'll either get someone in the role of deputy director for management soon, or B, for controller, what is Danny Werfel going to do at the end of the fiscal year? You know, Danny went to the IRS to be the IRS acting commissioner. They made it very clear at the beginning, you know, the announcement from the White House, that he was only going to be there through the end of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
There's some rumor, some buzz in the community that maybe that's Danny exits at that point from the government. He's been doing the controller job, the OMB job, for quite a while. This IRS job is not going to be any easier.
Well, so, he's a career OMB guy, so he's been at the agency
for a while. Well, he's a political now.
Yes.
Based on the controller job.
Yes, that's correct. But so, had spent time at OMB as a career employee before that.
So the question is, you know, does he come back to OMB, or does he just exit government service and go to the private sector? Long story short is, I think that's part of why both Norman Dong, the head of the Federal Financial Office, and Steve Van Roekel, the federal CIO, who's now going to lead the management efforts, didn't get those acting titles.
And I think that the reason I chose this as something we should follow all summer long is because I wonder if that strategy might not apply other places where there are openings, but where the administration either doesn't have candidates vetted yet or doesn't maybe want to prioritize them quite as highly. Maybe we'll see more of this. This person will have this portfolio, but not the title that goes with it, in order for us to be able to have someone in that job for however long we want.
And it depends on the job many times. I mean, what you see with acting secretaries, for instance, Commerce is a good example. Rebecca Blank has been acting Commerce Secretary for months and months now, and they gave her that acting title right away.
Mm.
You see other people, you know, there's an acting OPM Director, Elaine Kaplan's also the General Counsel. So it all depends on how high it up. Why in the White House are these people not acting yet in Commerce or OPM or other agencies there are acting? I think that's one of those Washington things that you really have to get into the minutiae of it. One of the interesting things that struck me about Steve Van Roekel and the management, you know, he had management duties before when he was the managing director at the FCC before he came over to USAID and then OMB. So I think part of that experience, that's what they're tapping into. Not that someone like Joe Jordan at OFPP, you know, he had management experience too, but I think that Steve's past experience kind of lends them to that place. And then the other thing I would just offer is, when is the next DDM going to be named? I mean, basically, there's been acting deputy director for management's off and on, or someone playing in the role, whether it was Danny Werfel or not, for the better part of 3 years, because Jeff Zients, who was the actual Senate-confirmed deputy director for management, he had been acting OMB director on and off for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always this shuffle. There's never this what I would call stability inside OMB. And, you know, I'll give credit to the Bush administration. They had stability in that DDM role. They had stability in the CIO role with Karen Evans. They had less stability in the OFPP. I'd give this administration more credit to say they had much more stability in OFPP this administration than the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every administration is a little different, push and pull.
The second most important federal news story you should pay attention to all summer long, my selection for that is Jason's story headlined, OMB Director Taps Van Roekel to Lead Management Team. That means that we have just the stories left that we've chosen as the most important federal news stories you should pay attention to all summer long, and we'll talk about those in just a minute on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My colleague Jason Miller and I counting down the three most important federal news stories you should pay attention to all summer long as we prepare for Monday, Memorial Day, the traditional beginning of the summer season. And we are up to on the Federal News Countdown.
Number one.
And my choice for the most important federal news story you should pay attention to all summer long is from Bloomberg. The headline is Price for a Budget Grand Bargain, or at least a bargain, dropping sharply. Jonathan Nicholson for Bloomberg is writing about the fact that the budget deficit, the debt ceiling that the Congress needs to raise, doesn't have to go quite as high, Jason, as it has been. And so that could potentially lead to less wrangling on Capitol Hill and a shorter period of that wrangling. And I wonder if this might not be another positive sign, of which I think we've seen several, about the fact that maybe this year, for the first time in it seems like a 100 years, we might get to September 30th and at least be close, or maybe even have in place a budget deal that would allow federal agencies to work under regular. I know. And
wait a minute.
Your eyes
come under the curse of the Furlough Friday thing, because you're even contemplating that a budget could be available as of by October 1st.
It's possible. I mean, it seems to me like it's possible.
Redskins could win the Super Bowl too. That is possible, my friend.
You seem to think that I'm hallucinating, so I'm going to guess that you're not as optimistic as me.
I think that your premise is right in the sense that less wrangling on Capitol Hill would be a very nice summer treat, kind of like a popsicle or something. But at the same time...
You know, those melt away rather quickly, and that's what I'm afraid of, is that this could too.
I think a budget's much more hopeful. I think that just history shows continuing resolutions are the way they do it. I would not disagree with you if you told me by January 1st, that they would have a budget in place, and it may even be a mini bus, you know, an omnibus that only addresses a few or some agencies. But I wouldn't be surprised if they get DOD done, if they get VA done, if they get Homeland Security done, all by that, you know, September, October, November timeframe. But I think it is good news that there could be less wrangling over debt ceilings. No one wants a threat of reaching the debt limit and going over the debt limit. Nobody wants to have that showdown again of government shutdowns. I think it doesn't, there's no winners. And I think sequestration, whether you think it's real or just all political motivated, it still is having an effect. And unfortunately, I think everybody loses in this. And I think that this is actually a positive sign.
The story says in 2010, Congress raised the debt ceiling by $1.9 trillion. In 2011, $2.1 trillion. As the search continues in 2013 for a budget grand bargain that would allow it to be raised again, the price tags dropped to a comparatively bargain basement amount of $900 billion or potentially even less than that. And the idea of that, I mean, that's, if you go back and look at those numbers, that's less than half of the amount that was needed to do it the last couple of times.
I think it's a recognition that the economy is growing, that there's more people at work, so there's more people paying taxes, there's more money coming into the government. And I think it's also a recognition that the agencies have been cutting spending. They're spending less money. Now, people could say, well, where? But at the same time, I mean, we write and we report on stories all the time that show examples of, hey, like I'll give you a perfect example. We talked about this mobile digital government strategy just recently. The big story about that was 1 year anniversary yesterday. And Steve Van Roekel, the federal CIO, offered an example from the Federal Student Aid Office, who said they had 14 websites at one time that was all about student aid. They've consolidated that into one, and now they have a mobile app for it to make things so much easier. That's saving money. Now, is it saving a lot of money? No. It's like you and me getting a coupon for save 10 cents. But the point is that things that they're figuring out ways, there are certain things that are happening that are cheaper. Same thing with hiring freezes. Agencies have not been replacing employees because of budget issues. That's saving money. So I think that part of that $900 billion, I think there's a couple of reasons why maybe they don't need to go as high. And it's, I think it's good news to a certain extent. I think agencies need more people. I think But cutting the budget, I think few people argue, is a bad thing.
The idea of an easier time to get to a budget is something that more and more people I hear on the Hill are hopeful of. And I know maybe not everybody's to my level of optimism yet, but just the fact that we have a White House budget framework, we have a House budget framework, and a Senate budget framework. That, to me, is such a positive step in the right direction. Now, I know the realities of this, and I understand that Senator Murray, the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, is sending out press releases at least once a week, challenging Speaker Boehner, appoint conferees, and let's start to work on a conference for budget. This kind of back and forth, and Speaker Boehner has reasons why he's chosen not to appoint conferees, and he's explained those extensively. So there's still plenty of back and forth, but that's not new, and it's not. It doesn't sound to me, at least, to be at the level of discourse that it's been at in the past, which has been pretty low. I mean, this is a pretty civil conversation about why we disagree on these two issues. Even Congressman Van Hollen, the ranking member of the House Budget Committee, has said the same thing. We should have conferees, but it doesn't look like anybody wants to stick a stake in the ground and say, by a certain date or any of this. Nobody's saying anything definitively. Everybody's door seems to be open to whatever could happen next.
Right. I think that when you listen to the rhetoric, it's less harsh.
Yes.
And I think that I would agree with you. That's a positive sign, especially for agencies who are saying right now, what am I going to have to deal with as I get closer to the end of the fiscal year? One of the really big concerns that I'm hearing in industry right now is all this year-end spending. Have agencies been sitting on contracts and awards, and all of a sudden they're going to have to get a lot out the door in July and August and September? Well, what happens is you go into the 2014 fiscal year. Do they then all of a sudden pull back again because, well, I don't know what's happening? And a lot of what Congress says and what they do, but what they say kind of helps make agencies feel more comfortable or less comfortable with how quickly they move on contracts on activities.
The most important federal news story you should pay attention to all summer long, according to me, is the Bloomberg story, Price for a Budget Grand Bargain, or at least a bargain, dropping sharply. There's a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And Jason's choice for number one on the countdown this week is next to wrap up the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and Federal News Radio.com. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And on the Federal News Countdown this week, my colleague Jason Miller and I are counting down the three most important federal news stories that you should pay attention to all summer long. And Jason's number one story is about what I think is the big story of today, at least.
Furlough Friday.
The headline is 5% of federal workforce to be furloughed Friday. And as we've mentioned several times throughout the course of
Furlough Friday.
There are 115,000 employees approximately that are not working today. They're not making money, and they're not getting the work of the people done, Jason.
Absolutely. And I think that this, from looking at it over the next 3, 4, 5 months, and as you mentioned, the summer starts, you know, officially Tuesday, this is going to be something that we're going to hear a lot about. There's agencies are going to close throughout the year. I mean, throughout the summer. I mean, look, HUD, for instance, today is HUD's first furlough day, but they're going to have 7 more by August 30th. And I think that all those days are going to start to impact people not getting things done. And as we talked about in my third most important story about backlogs at VA, what could that mean to backlogs at other agencies? Now, I'm not saying HUD will have a backlog, but I'm saying missing days of work when you're totally shut down creates backups. And you know, does that eventually create a backlog? I mean, the IRS is in the same situation where it's got to take 5 days between now and August 30th. And then you have other agencies. EPA will have to take as many as 10 days, what they say, no more than 79 hours by September 30th as well. So all these agencies are going to stop what they're doing on certain days. And that just is going to cause challenges and cause backups. And I believe it's something that people are going to look back on by the time we get to the end of summer, and someone's going to say, "Wow, that was a bad thing, that sequestration."
The hit and miss nature of this is going to be the hardest thing, I think, for the people who deal with the government, both contractors and the general public, to kind of figure out, to strategize. Because your story on federalnewsradio.com right now says Interior spokeswoman Jessica Kershaw said the Park Police has already issued furlough notices, but the U.S. Geological Survey and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, two component agencies inside Interior, have not yet issued furlough notices. Now, we did see today that the Park Police will not have furloughs. But this is another wrinkle here that I don't think a lot of people are making the distinction of, and that is just because I send you a furlough notice doesn't mean I actually am going to furlough you. It just means I have the ability to do so. If I figure out later on that I don't have to, then I don't have to.
And it does. It leaves people, leaves federal employees kind of up in the air. And as we talked about, it also affects the rest of the economy. Because if I'm a federal employee at, let's say, U.S. Geological Survey, and then all of a sudden Interior tells me, okay, you are going to be furloughed, or you have the option to furlough, all of a sudden I'm going to stop spending my money. Now, let's be clear, they have not told the USGS this yet, but you know, at any agency, that same effect happens. And then you also, for instance, DOD is one of the biggest agency. They're expecting 11 days of furlough. Well, if Secretary Hagel comes back in a month and says, okay, only 7 days now. But you're still, but from a money standpoint, from a finance standpoint for your household, you're still planning for 11 days. So the guessing, the hiccups, the leaving people hanging is just, I think it's a bad sign all the way around.
And I guess the connection that I draw between your selection for the most important story we should follow all summer long and my choice about the budget is that they're really tied together, because we're talking about sequestration in the context of this fiscal year, of it ending on September 30th. There's no guarantee sequestration's over September 30th.
Correct.
The federal budget frameworks that I was so optimistic about, and continue to be fair, from the president, from the House, and from the Senate, I'll give DOD as an example. They're all way over by, I believe the calculation was at least $40 billion, the Budget Control Act number that the Pentagon's supposed to operate under for fiscal 2014. So if a budget of that, of one of those numbers winds up being the one, the top line at least, that President Obama signs into law, then they're still going to have to figure another $40 billion in sequestration or whatever the number is to be able to meet the Budget Control Act numbers. So we could be back at the beginning of October looking at another countdown all over again.
I would agree with you, Matt, but there's a lot of optimism that they'll be able to fix sequestration. But there was a lot of optimism over the last 6 months before sequestration
people
started.
People thought that in November, too.
Exactly. They said, the president made the famous comment during the debate with Governor Romney. Sequestration is never going to happen. Well, here we are. Now people are being furloughed. So I think there's a lot of disappointment around the fact is that nothing could get done either by Congress or the White House. And there is that fear that remains. But I think that while your point is, I think, fair, that when you look 6 months from now, in the next 3 months is when people, I think, are really paying attention to this and saying, how am I going to deal with this? What's this going to affect on me? And then, as you talked about earlier, there's fixes that are coming left and right as well from Congress. So I think that the uncertainty of the entire situation is bad and is causing anxiety. And that's why it's kind of one of those stories we're all going to be watching.
And the patchwork part of this is, I think, maybe the worst part of it, because we look at the FAA air traffic controllers. That boiled up and then boiled over in the course of, what, 2 or 3 days?
Easily, yeah.
And I heard people at a number of agencies talking about that at MOC this week, Management of Change Conference down in Cambridge. Well, if they could fix that in a couple of days, they could fix any of these other problems in a couple of days. So people are aware of that, especially the people in the government that all of this is affecting. And they're watching that, and they're seeing, I think, a couple of messages. One is, maybe we're not as important to people. Maybe nobody cares about us as much as they care about people in other parts of the government. That's one. And the other message is that Congress doesn't have to operate the way that they've operated, that members, for whatever reason, maybe legitimate reasons, are choosing to operate in the way that they're operating. And that's the reason why some of these things that ostensibly should be happening aren't happening.
It also goes back to the question is, why can't people explain the importance of a HUD or an EPA or an IRS? What's the confusion? I mean, the reason why the FAA got fixed is because all of a sudden the members could go, oh, wow, that's going to affect me. I don't want to have to wait in line. I don't want to miss my plane. And I think that's a failing of both the unions but also the White House.
Jason Miller's most important federal news story of the week is about
Furlough Friday.
5% of the federal workforce to be furloughed Friday. That's today, and it's our top story now, not just on the Federal News Countdown, as chosen by Jason Miller, but also on federalnewsradio.com. A terrific countdown of the stories that we should be paying attention to all summer long. Good to have you on the program, Jason.
Always a pleasure.
And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in just a minute. All the stories we counted down today will be up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.